guys.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. Would you like to reserve some rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor. 5 minutes, please.
Certainly.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Terrence Martin. I'm an assistant public defender in the city of Chesapeake. I'm here on behalf of my client, Davionte Grandy. On appeal to this court, Your Honors, for the denial of a motion to recuse on the part of the presiding judge at trial and a motion to set a new trial based on comments made by the presiding judge at trial.
Is anything in the record to indicate that she was actually prejudiced?
Judge, I think her own statements, and I would draw the court's attention to her statement. Perhaps you will tell the court in addressing counsel, because I'm not sure if this is an intimidation tactic, but I am certainly uncomfortable with it. And so, Judge, I think what the court was indicating to both me and my client and the public in that courtroom that day, that she had a personal bias towards my client.
We need to put that statement in context.
Yes, Your Honor.
You had argued that he had really changed, that he was now a good guy and, you know, behaved himself. And in response to that, that's when the trial court said that he kept staring at me and made me feel uncomfortable.
Judge,
why isn't that a proper response to your argument that he has really turned around as a good guy?
Your Honor, I think it's important to point out first that there were two jury trials over multiple days for each trial. And in the course of both of those jury trials, the court indicated by her statements that she was uncomfortable, seemingly intimidated, at every moment of both of those jury trials.
Well, counsel, let me interrupt you.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think specifically my recollection is that the judge said she was not intimidated. Can you point to any place in the record where she says she was intimidated? I agree that she said she was uncomfortable, but I don't recall her stating that she was intimidated.
Her exact words, Your Honor, were that whether she was not sure if this was, in fact, an intimidation tactic.
Right.
Those were her words.
She goes on to point out that she was not intimidated.
Your Honor, I don't believe that she ever confirmed that she was not intimidated. And again, she did add that she was certainly uncomfortable with the otherwise innocuous behavior of my client by staring, having his gaze towards the bench for the course of these trials.
Well, isn't it her responsibility as the judge to observe his demeanor?
Absolutely, Judge. And I think the distinction made in the Prieto case, Your Honor, which is cited by both counsels, is that a court rightly can judge the demeanor of a client, whether they seem to express any sort of remorse, if they're slumping in their chair, if they're rolling their eyes in disrespect. But what we have here, Judge, is a client that is acting respectfully and is merely has his gaze towards the bench. And from that, the court concluded that, in fact, she was suggesting that this was an intimidation tactic.
Well,
I would suggest that's not
the hearing on the recusal motion, she specifically said she hadn't been intimidated.
Judge, I do believe that the court backtracked when presented with the evidence, Judge, and saying that she was not, in fact, intimidated, that, in fact, she had not been staring at the client the entire time, that, of course, she had taken her eyes off him at certain points in time when she was addressing the jury.
On a recusal issue, isn't it your burden to point specifically to where your client was prejudiced?
Judge, I think the words alone would indicate to my client and to the general public, as dictated by the canons of judicial ethics and statutory interpretations in case law, that these sorts of statements, over and above observations of demeanor of a client, should be considered in terms of whether a judge is impartial or has exercised a bias towards a particular client before the court. And I believe that these words, in the context especially of repeated interruptions during counsel's closing arguments, and then it resulted in, by the way, I'm uncomfortable with the way your client has looked at me for the entirety of two jury trials.
This was a jury trial, wasn't it?
Two jury trials, yes, Your Honor, but the last.
Was there any impropriety about instructions given to the jury?
We do not address the issues of instructions, Your Honor.
No, what I'm saying is these are areas where if she was prejudiced against your client, this prejudice might have appeared in instructions. I'm assuming that the jury sentenced your client.
Your Honor, I would ultimately argue that because this was a juvenile and the court,
right, so the court the
was
court
responsible.
Was there any anything inappropriate about the sentencing?
I would argue yes, Judge. Certainly it's within the discretion of the court to sentence as they feel appropriate.
Were there guidelines?
There were guidelines, Your Honor.
Was he sentenced within the guidelines?
He was sentenced within the guidelines, Judge.
Are there any rulings, evidentiary rulings, that the court made that you think might have resulted from her prejudice?
Judge, we do not argue that in this petition. But over and above that, Judge, when a presiding judge makes a statement that demonstrates a personal bias, and that is expressed in a public fashion, it is contrary to the integrity of the court in the sense of the public's perception of how a judge is going to rule. And when a judge comes down on a simple, innocuous, again, physical attribute of a client and comes down on that as a point that she is making a decision in terms of an ultimate sentence, because but for that, the court is saying that this particular individual is trying to intimidate me. This is part of their character. I will base my sentence based on this as well. And in this attempt to intimidate was a personal matter with the judge, Your Honors. And I think that the canon suggests that a judge should recuse themselves when there is demonstrative bias. And I think these statements by themselves are demonstrative.
You would agree that there are plenty of Supreme Court cases that say the canons of judicial ethics don't govern appellate decisions.
I would argue that the court should consider the weight of those canons in terms of judicial behavior. But I would also point to the statutory interpretation that a judge should remain impartial. Any demonstrable basis for impartiality should be explored, especially as it is perceived by the public. And I can tell the court that you had a courtroom full of people, including family members, and it all came down to this statement by a judge after multiple days of trial. I believe that you're intimidating me. I'm uncomfortable with this, and I am now going to fashion your sentence. For a 14-year-old defendant who was acting nothing more than respectful during the course of both jury trials, and I think that conclusions were drawn from the court's interpretation of that innocuous behavior. And I think it is demonstrative of prejudice, of impartiality, of bias. It should not have been said. If the court had a problem with this behavior, the court had multiple days during the first jury trial, multiple days during the second jury trial to hold my client in contempt or
counsel,
to address
didn't
it.
Didn't she in fact say that? That if she in fact had felt that she was intimidated, that's exactly what she would have done.
It's what she should have done is our argument, Your Honor. If she's going to make these statements, she should have exercised her judicial authority and impose contempt if, in fact, for every single moment for two jury trials, she was intimidated or thought that she might be being intimidated, but certainly was uncomfortable with his behavior.
But that's what she indicated, and this is what the court has to review, is the record and the statements that she's made, which that if she had felt that she were being intimidated, that that would have been the mechanism that she could have affected the appropriate sort of outcome.
So, I mean, I would ask you to speak about it in reference to what she actually said in the record.
What she said with certainty is that she was certainly uncomfortable with his behavior. So if we rely on that statement alone, again, she was uncomfortable throughout two jury trials. The presiding judge was discomforted by that behavior. She could have exercised at an appropriate time during the course of both jury trials her power of contempt. But in fact, she did not do that. She reserved that for sentencing.
She had better ways to handle this issue isn't really relevant. The bottom line is whether or not he was prejudiced. And as I understand it, you're saying, I don't have to show specifics, it's per se prejudice. Is that basically your bottom line?
I think it's incumbent upon any presiding judge to take in, within themselves, to take into account.
No.
Yes, sir.
Answer my question first.
Whether or not there was actual prejudice.
No. Well, you haven't pointed to any actual prejudice. As I understand it, you're saying that her statement alone is per se prejudice.
I believe it is, Your Honor. And I say that because they are the presiding court's statements. They were made at sentencing, prior to her imposition of sentence. And when a presiding judge says, I'm not comfortable with this person because of their particular behavior, which is entirely extrajudicial, it has nothing to do with her feelings about the case itself, the facts of the case. But in fact, it was just an extrajudicial comment.
But how is that extrajudicial under Prieto? I mean, Prieto specifically speaks about the fact that it's something that occurs outside of the hearing, and that the court can, in fact, take into consideration things that are occurring during the scope of whatever the hearing or trial may be.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, that goes back to Your Honor's previous question, I would argue, about demeanor. And a court can take all of those things into account, a credibility of a witness, how they're acting in court, whether they're respectful towards the procedures. But what we have here is nothing more than one person, a 14-year-old, staring at the bench. I would argue that there is nothing that any reasonable mind could look at in terms of that behavior and then draw a conclusion that it was somehow an intimidation tactic or an attempt on the part of the defendant to make the presiding judge, who was ultimately responsible for sentencing, uncomfortable. And so in that sense, it is distinguished from Prieto in the sense that it does not include a court's general perception of a defendant or the facts of the case that may result in a certain feeling about a defendant or the facts of a case. In the Prieto case, you know, we were dealing with a murder. The court referred to slaughter and things of that nature, but that court heard the facts of the case. But in this case, there was nothing about the facts of the case that would indicate that this particular defendant was trying to intimidate personally this judge who would ultimately make a sentencing decision in these matters, Your Honor. So I think it is distinguished in that manner because he was doing nothing more than being respectful. So her statements, Your Honor, I would argue, were unreasonable. They were a demonstration of impartiality and bias, and that this defendant should have, at best, a new trial, and or, in the alternative, a new sentencing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. I think it's useful to begin by talking about the standard of review in this case, and it is an abuse of discretion standard. And only where reasonable jurists could not differ as to the outcome can we say that an abuse of discretion has been made by the trial court's denial of these motions. And I submit that under these facts that standard is not met. Judge Frank, you correctly note that the defendant bears the burden to prove prejudice in this instance and has failed to identify any item in the record other than these comments that would suggest he was prejudiced at trial. And relying on the statements of the court to demonstrate bias requires looking at them in context. And the defendant makes much of the trial court statement at the December sentencing that it was uncomfortable and construes that one word, certainly uncomfortable, two words, in a light most favorable to the defendant, freighting it with all sorts of unexpressed meaning from what the bench actually uttered. And I would submit that that's incorrect, that we ought to look at that phrase in a light most favorable to the Commonwealth, having prevailed below. All the judge indicated was that this pattern of staring at her was uncomfortable. That might have meant nothing more than inappropriate. And certainly the trial court had an opportunity to more fully put on the record what the trial court thought about that at the time the motion was visited. And Judge Malveaux, as you indicate, the trial court expressed that it was never intimidated. Had it been intimidated, it certainly would have taken action. So I think it's incorrect to read that original statement to say, well, this is clear evidence that the trial court was intimidated not only at sentencing but through the entire two proceedings. There's no support in the record for that. Simply, it is a contextual response to an argument from counsel that this defendant has matured and changed during their pretrial confinement. And the trial court, having been presented with someone that would not break their stare at them, said, well, counsel, let me ask you about this. What is the meaning of this? Because I don't know. I'm not sure what that's supposed to be. Tell me about it. And I would submit that that's an entirely appropriate exercise of the trial court's mission to judge a person by their demeanor at sentencing, to take that into account. It's a circumstance the trial court can take into account. So I would submit that the burden has not been met to demonstrate prejudice in this case. That only by expanding extrajudicial source to a context way beyond what the jurisprudence would dictate can counsel argue that the judge was inappropriately influenced by this. I would submit that that's exactly the exercise trial courts do every day. And with that, I would happily answer any questions the panel may have. Otherwise, I would rely on my brief and ask you to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Katz.
I have no questions.
Mr. Martin?
Yes, sir.
Your Honors, I would just point out that in terms of the standard of review, in terms of a mistrial, what needs to be established is a manifest probability of prejudice. And I think that's what the court is asking, what I'm asking the court to review. Is there a demonstrable showing of actual prejudice other than a perception that the court was being unbiased or biased?
Counsel, when you refer to a mistrial, ultimately, the time was long gone for mistrial, so what you had was the motion for recusal. What we've argued. Is that not correct?
The motion did include both a motion to recuse, a motion for mistrial.
Well, yes, of course, I read it, but the point being is that the mistrial was not timely. The motion for mistrial was not timely made.
I believe it was, Judge. I don't believe that it was waived in any way because the statements were made by the court at sentencing. And the motion itself addressed those particular concerns of the defendant.
When was the motion made?
Pardon me?
The statements were made in court. When was the motion made?
Judge, it was not made concurrent with those statements.
Thank you. That means that, therefore, it had to have been basically waived. I'm sure you're not going to agree with me, but that, of course, that's the issue in reference to a mistrial.
Yes, and I would point out that the sentencing on that particular day was not concluded. So the sentencing continued in time for various reasons, Your Honor. Reports were not completed by various probation officers and things of that nature. So when the issue was then again addressed, it was still before the court because sentencing had not, in fact, been completed.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that issue, but counsel, thank you. Are there other issues you wish? Your time's out, but based on my question, I'll be happy to give you a little
time. I appreciate your time, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
All right.